Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shab Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Brian Lenny, founder and publisher of the Junior Stock Review. And Brian, it's always great getting you on the show just to get your thoughts on investing in the junior mining sector. We mostly talk about the precious metals, but I know you're agnostic. You look at different metals or minerals, and you're even starting to look at some of the oil and natural gas stocks now. So you're open to companies that have a good business model. But just because the precious metals are so topical the last couple of weeks, it's interesting to me what's happened where gold and silver prices have ratcheted higher initially off the back of all the banking sector concerns. And people started realizing, hey, this is getting pretty serious. Maybe I should hedge my bets with the safe haven of gold and silver. But then just the last couple of days, it seems like it's a reaction to Fed policy, central bank policy, not just in the U.S., but really globally, a lot of the central banks getting near the end of the line as far as the tightening. In fact, bailing out all these banks, whether you're in Switzerland or whether you're in the U.S., is actually adding to the balance sheets of these central banks, not tightening them anymore. So at this point, we've got a nice solid run going in gold and silver. Now it's getting close to those levels of resistance where they could get swatted down. But my observation, Brian, is that the mining stocks really haven't played along as much. They haven't really kept up with this move. What is your takeaway about how the precious metals mining stocks have reacted in relation to the move we saw in the metals the last couple of weeks?
Thanks for having me, Shad. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, the equities definitely haven't kept up with the metal price movements. And, you know, we've seen, let's just, you know, use gold as an example. We've seen a very strong gold price over the last, say, 3 or 4 months. And over the last, like, month and a half, kind of leading up to all this stuff that's gone on, we've seen, you know, plus $1,900 per ounce gold. You know, terrific number in terms of historical significance and just today in general from what we've seen compared to, you know, this time last year. Yet the equities have been mostly laggards. And I think, you know, honestly, I think especially with the general retail investor who may or may not even be in the equities right now, but probably sits there and tries to understand what's exactly going on in this world. You know, you touched on a couple of those things. You know, SVB goes down, Signature Bank goes down, the Fed comes in, you know, says that they're going to guarantee everything. And at the same time, we saw this week, they raised rates, you know, in amongst this chaos, which you could say is probably caused by this rapid rate hike spree that the Fed's been on, yet they continue. That we saw, you know, last week in the EU, we had the EU raise rates by 0.5%, and, you know, they're beating their chest saying that, you know, we're strong. And, you know, by the way, you know, Credit Suisse needs some help, so we're going to give them 30 billion euro. And then we learned this week, well, you know, actually, UBS is going to buy Credit Suisse, and they're going to buy them for pennies on the dollar. And but everything is still okay. And so I think, you know, especially the average retail investor looks at that and thinks, wow, you know, This seems to be a market that is just fraught with risk. And, you know, and I think given the state of the gold price, it tells you that where people are putting their money and the equities might follow. You know, today has been a pretty good day on a whole, you know, across the junior sector. But I still think that kind of up in the air type of mentality is still there, like a very much a risk off in terms of the equities. And hopefully that changes. But I don't necessarily think that the general audience is necessarily wrong. There is a lot of risk out there. But the juniors at these market caps, given where the metal prices are, I think give tremendous risk to reward potential. And so for someone like me, this is the perfect time to be deploying money into the market.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Brian, because there's a lot of generalist investors that are probably a little bit spooked by, hey, you know, if we're in the middle of a banking crisis, why is the Fed still hiking rates? And the Fed is hiking rates because they're trying to fight inflation, which has remained stickier and higher than they were expecting. But they have to realize that at this point, it's causing some ripples in the marketplace. So everything is kind of getting to this choke point where there's probably a lot of people that have analysis paralysis and they'd rather not do anything. Or if anything, they may get in the precious metals themselves, more so than the mining stocks. But that's exactly the kind of environment where you see a great deal on getting into mining stocks. I guess another question I have, Brian, I know you follow the developers very closely and you run your own models and you look at how you value them. All we heard last year from Main Street investors was that, hey, you don't want to be in the gold or the silver companies or even the copper companies because inflation is making their costs go up. Wages are going up. Cement's going up. The cost of chemical reagents is going up. And of course, diesel cost was going up and fuel. Well, now we've seen the reverse of that starting to play out over the last few months where energy prices have pulled back dramatically. Lumber and cement and chemical reagents and explosive, all of those prices are coming down while the prices of the underlying metals are going up. So shouldn't that be helping the margins of producers? Shouldn't that be helping the economics of development projects?
I think generally you're bang on. I think the market needs to see it over a more prolonged period of time, like, you know, multiple quarters in a row. And I think the other side to it is, at least from my perspective, I think this is sort of a temporary thing that we're seeing in terms of the costs of, you know, these consumable goods that, like you said, oil, wood, all these things that go into development of mines and different things around the world. I think this is somewhat of a temporary thing that we're seeing, is a weakness in these prices. And, you know, it's on the back of recession fears and tightening credit. But I think over the long run, what happens is when you raise interest rates, you end up causing higher prices, because what happens is people cut production, and you cut production because of low prices and outlook, and you end up creating higher prices over a longer period of time. And so I think this is a momentary blip, and, you know, it might result in some share price appreciation if, you know, if it's multiple quarters that we indeed see this kind of recessionary type factors, yet the gold price and some of the metal prices stay high. And so that we ultimately, that might be a good thing. But I think over the long term, this is an inflationary environment that's not going to be quelled by higher interest rates. And so it's a blip on the screen. And that's just how I look at it right now. And for me, you know, the companies that I'm investing in are selling for less than they're worth. And while the short-term blip may help them in terms of costs in the short term, I think that you buy those companies because I think invariably we're going to see higher prices in the future. And that's going to result in those precious metals prices or those other metals prices having to be higher to compensate for it, because it'll just squeeze margins. And when you squeeze margins, you squeeze supply. And we all know what happens when supply drops. And, you know, the Fed's plan to diminish demand, which is, you know, a crazy way to sort of deal with the inflation side of things, I think it's going to backfire on them. And we're already seeing that, because they're not going to be, in my view anyways, they're not going to be able to keep up this pace, and they're going to have to turn around soon. And when they do that, I think you're really going to see a spike in inflation. And it's unfortunate for the general population.
That's an interesting point, that some of these price decreases that we've seen, be it in energy or in some of the raw materials that go into the construction of the mines, that could just be a temporary blip down. And if those go back up and there is inflation, then we're going to see the margin squeezed once again. I guess just one more thought on this, as far as how you look at valuing companies in your portfolio. There are some companies that use lower metal price assumptions, and they kind of are a defensive play. And you can look at them and say, hey, even if gold and silver pulled back from here, these companies are still quite economic, or the project is still quite economic. But then there's other companies you look at and you think, boy, it looks okay now, but from an optionality standpoint, if we do see metals prices move higher, this thing really jumps up on a percentage basis more than the peers. So I could see them outperforming based on optionality. Which ones are you more attracted to in this environment, or are you attracted to both kinds of companies, ones that are more defensive or ones that have more optionality?
Well, for me, it's a mixed bag. I think generally speaking with the metals, I've been more attracted to the more of the best of the best, meaning the companies that have more of a buffer on the metal price. But I think in certain segments of the market, such as energy, I think optionality is probably not a bad place to be given the environment that we're in. And it always depends. Like, I don't want to stamp it and say that this is exactly how I'm going to think every single time, because it is very different with each individual company. But I think on the energy side, given the world we live in, you know, we're eliminating fossil fuels, you know, seemingly without any thought to what the future may hold and how realistic it is to eliminate them by 2050 or 2030. I think, you know, the war in Europe and Asia between the Russians and the Ukrainians is a huge thing that could spiral out of control probably at any moment. When you start living in a world like this, I think that being probably more short-term focused on commodity price appreciation is probably not a horrible place to be. Again, if all the other aspects of the company are in order, you know, they've got enough cash to buffer themselves when you have moments like this, when the commodity price is low, it's run by good people, their perspectives for development are there. These things need to be there too. But I'm much more likely to take an optionality play in the energy sector just because of those things I outlined. Because I think kind of almost no matter where you're headed, energy is going to be a big part of the narrative moving forward. And I think unfortunately that comes with higher prices. So yeah, that's kind of how I view the two. But it isn't one thing. It's each company individually.
Well, just one more to throw at you on companies and like, should you or shouldn't you at this point? There are companies that are cashed up and they've got a good work program lined up and everybody knows that. Then there's also good companies that unfortunately are running low on cash and everybody knows that too, Brian. So they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. They're waiting to find out about the financing. There's a lot of stocks that are doing good work, quality teams, quality projects. But there's a money overhang or there's a money underhang issue. There's not enough money, and everybody knows that financing is coming. How are you handling those kind of companies, whether they're in your portfolio, on your watch list, whether subscribers are talking to you about them? How are you dealing with quality teams, quality projects that are low on funding?
If I own them and they're, near at the top of my portfolio ranking list, then I'm looking to try to put more money into it. And whether that's participating in the financing or, participating in the share price action while the price is low. Because I think, most of these management teams, while they don't like to raise money at these low prices, they see the risk ahead. If the money's there, they're going to raise it. And maybe it may not be the full amount that they would like. But I think you're going to see most good management teams move ahead when the money's there and take it. And I think investors should sort of move in the same sort of manner. And the good companies you need to be adding to, and the other ones, if you don't own the company, then you wait for your best opportunity. And maybe that comes after the placement's announced, or whether you're on the sidelines, you're waiting for that placement to be announced to go into the placement. I think these are the things that you need to be looking for. So, it's tough though. It's tough though, because I don't think any investor, including myself, loves to get diluted. And it doesn't matter what price, it just makes it that much worse when the prices are this low. But these, especially on the development side and the exploration side, these companies are constantly burning money. And so it's part and parcel with being an investor in the sector. So I think you need to realize that and just be more focused on how the company is using that money on a day-to-day basis, rather than, being too hung up on what price they're necessarily raising at. Because if you pick the right companies and the right people running the company, you're going to come into situations like this. And again, while it's unfortunate they raise at lower prices, it's usually a necessity. And if they're putting the money to work, you should get paid in the end.
Brian, I always appreciate how you view these different questions that investors have. But another thing investors should consider is something that you've talked about a couple of times recently at the Metals Investor Forum, just recently, right by the PDAC, and also in a couple other interviews you've done. And I think it's such an interesting topic that I'd love you to share it with our audience as well. And it's the topic of the three biases that you believe investors have. If you wouldn't mind, break down what you've been talking to investors about at some of these conferences and what the main takeaways are that maybe people are unwittingly biased and don't even realize it, or they're doing things that are sabotaging their investing career. Walk us through some of the nuggets of wisdom that you've gained over the decades of investing in this space.
Sure. So the three biases that I think are losing investors money right now, first, confirmation bias. Number two, over-influenced by social proof. And number three, misweighing bias. So if we start with confirmation bias, I think, one of the biggest things as a value investor or somebody who's going to be buying companies that are selling for less than they're worth is that you have to make sure that, once you've outlined your investment thesis, you need to go out there and look for disconfirming evidence. Everybody's so comfortable going out there and being in an echo chamber and listening to people who agree with them. And it feels great. But the fact is, you're not really learning anything when people are just telling you something you already know or believe. You need to go out there and look at what the naysayers are saying about that individual company. Then, obviously, not all the naysayers are going to be correct. There's going to be a lot of guys that are just trying to, cast mud onto companies they don't like for whatever reason, or maybe they don't like you. And so you got to take it with a grain of salt. But you need to look at what they're saying and then take a very concerted effort to try to debunk it. Because the fact is that usually companies that are selling for a discount are selling for reasons. And you want to identify the reasons that can be overcome. Reasons that can be overcome can be, lack of promotion, lack of cash, metal price. You know, these three things to me are the perfect hallmarks of companies that are selling for less than they're worth that you want to look for, because companies can raise money if they're a good company and the right people find it. They can get money. When they get that money, they should be able to do good work. And hopefully it coincides at some point with the metal price rising. So these can be overcome. On the other side, if it's a mineral processing issue, maybe it's like a social issue at the locale of where the project's located. You know, there's a dispute between the project and maybe, you know, the indigenous or a local community in the area. And this can these can be major problems, and they can be problems why the company will continually be listed at a discount. So again, you need to look at what the naysayers are saying and put some real effort into trying to prove them wrong, or, you know, proving yourself wrong, you know, by examining those points. The second one, the over-influence by social proof, and this is the bias of following the herd. And, you know, really what you, I think you want to watch out for is buying when the herd is kind of hit this capitulation type of moment, when, you know, valuations have gone sky, you know, through the roof. When you calculate the value of a company and their company selling at a premium to NAV, these are times when you really got to think to yourself, hey, everybody might be excited about this, but this is crazy. And there's a number of examples from the resource sector we've even seen over the last couple of years where valuations have gotten way ahead of themselves. Invariably, those share prices have come right back. And again, so these are the moments when you want to look at what the herd is saying and kind of take heed. That's both the upside and the downside, you know, and that probably right now where everybody's so fearful, I think it's the time when people need to be greedy. The last one, misweighing bias, is I think probably the most interesting one, because misweighing bias is doing the right things but in the wrong order. And the example I used in my presentation was like, okay, you want to live a healthier life. So in order, I think if you want to live a healthier life, what you need to do is first and foremost, you need to fix what you eat and drink. You know, that old adage that you are what you eat, I think is absolutely right. Second, you want to make sure that you're breathing good air. So, you know, probably not smoking anything. You're probably not living right downtown in a highly industrial area next to factories and stuff like that, where the air quality or smog is that much worse. Third, you know, you're getting good sleep, good quality sleep, no good number of hours of sleep. And then finally, you know, you're getting up and you're exercising, you're moving. So basically, I think the order of those matter. You know, you can go out there and you can start exercising, you can lift weights, you can do whatever. But if you're still going to McDonald's or eating fast food for all your meals, you're probably not going to get the maximum return on going to the gym. You know, net net, you know, going to the gym is a good thing. It's the right thing. But unless you fix those other three things, you're probably not going to maximize it. You know, you're still probably taking in too many calories from what you're eating. If you're smoking, you know, you're going to have a hard time with your cardiovascular. And then the third one, if you're not getting the right quality of sleep, you probably don't have the maximum amount of energy to expend in the gym. So, you know, going to the gym may be one of the easiest things to sell people. Yet, if the other things ahead of it aren't done, you're really not maximizing what you're doing at the gym. So the point is, you need to do the right things, but you need to do them in the right order. And for me, in investing, it starts with the most important thing, and that's being self-aware. You need to understand what type of risk you want to take in the sector, how much you know, what you don't know, what your timeline for investment is. You need to get all these things sorted out, and that's going to direct you on how to use things like the price to value ratio to maximize your profitability in the sector. And doing those sort of things in the right order is ultimately what's going to lead to you making the most amount of money. And that's kind of the points I was trying to convey.
Some really good thoughts there, Brian. I'm glad you shared that with folks here at the KE Report, because I think we've all been guilty of those things in the past. And it's easy to slip into confirmation bias or to get in with the herd and the influence of the social proof and say, hey, everybody else thinks it's a good company. That's why I'm chasing it higher too. And it's easy to get wrong-footed as an investor by doing some of those things. And then even if you're doing the right things, if you're doing them in the wrong order, you're not going to maximize your results. So some great points there, and some great points on just how you look at investing in the development stage companies and just the junior mining stocks in general. So always appreciate getting your thoughts, Brian. Thanks for spending some time with us here at the KE Report, and looking forward to our next conversation.
Thanks for having me, Shad.